With time running out on the legislative schedule, we're checking in with Assembly Health Committee Chair Dick Gottfried for a status check on some key issues and a broader discussion about New York's public health. Welcome back to the show, Assemblyman, and may I say, it's great to be able to have you here in person.
Yes, it's one of the many pleasures of the season.
Well, we'll see. Hopefully I can actually deliver on that. So it takes 76 votes to pass a bill in your chamber, and as we talk on Thursday morning, your bill creating the New York Health Act has more than 76 co-sponsors, which also signals that about three-quarters of your Assembly majority colleagues support the measure, including the chair of the Codes Committee, where your bill is currently sitting. Can you help listeners understand its current status, including the possibility that it might get a floor vote in the next week?
Getting to the floor before the session runs out next week would be a real uphill challenge.
Why is that?
There are a lot of Assembly majority party members, whether it's a lot, I don't know, including, I am told, some people who have even signed on as co-sponsors of the bill, who have been expressing concerns about the bill and even opposition to it to the Speaker's office. It's kind of annoying that these are apparently Assembly members who are telling the public and me that they're all for the bill, but are privately going to the Speaker saying, oh, not really. And there are groups that are out in the, you know, in the general population who are very important parts of the Assembly and majority's constituency. And by the way, the same is true on the Senate side, mm-hmm. where we have a majority of the Senate are co-sponsors of the bill. In particular, the various public employee unions have been opposing the bill. You know, these are unions that that have negotiated fairly generous health plans that we all pay for mm-hmm. them. And I certainly don't begrudge them the quality of the benefits they have. But we have so far not been able to persuade them that, A, the New York Health Act scope of benefits is not only as good as what they've negotiated, but a whole lot better. We're reaching out to them to ask, you know, can we talk about your specific concerns? Are there things we can do to change the bill that might give you more reassurance? You know, we've been having this discussion with them off and on for, I guess, 2 or 3 years now. Hopefully, now that we have a majority in both houses that are at least on record supporting the bill, we can make some progress on meeting their concerns and winning their support. I think that'll be really important to getting a vote on the floor in either house. So we are continuing to work on that. I think it is enormously important, not only to 20 million New Yorkers, but including our public sector employees and their families. You know, my mother, pretty much all her working career, was a New York City teacher and then a New York City retiree. So I'm a little familiar with teacher health benefits. And one thing I do know is that it certainly did not include long-term care, which the New York Health Act does. And in the last few years of my mother's life, when she was on home health care, paying for it out of, you know, the savings that she and my father had built up over a life, it basically wiped out all of her savings because she wasn't low income enough for Medicaid and was paying for this out of her savings. A New York City teacher should not have to do that. No New Yorker should have to do that. And under the New York Health Act, no New Yorker would.
Proponents of the measure have held press conferences. Some of your colleagues made a viral video recently. I don't know if you saw that.
Yes.
And there have been rallies. Does this advocacy matter, or is it more about what you're talking about with regards to working behind the scenes to directly address some of the concerns that some of the major stakeholders have with this legislation?
Well, we need both. One factor about the New York Health Act, which I have really been at a loss to understand, is that there are a lot of issues, very important issues, that have gotten very vocal and very visible lobbying. And legislators, partly in response to that lobbying, are energized about a lot of these issues as being, you know, really top priority issues, whether it's rental assistance because of COVID, mm-hmm. or criminal justice reforms, a variety of other issues. For reasons that continue to mystify me, the health issue has not attracted that kind of adamant, waving pitchforks support. And that's not only true in this moment in New York, it's been true almost at any given point throughout American history. And so things like marches and rallies and the like, I think are very important as a way of helping to light fires under both advocacy groups and legislators. Lighting that kind of fire is going to be very essential to getting this bill done.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Assembly Health Committee Chair Dick Gottfried. You have a bill making its way through the committee process in the Capitol, which regulates certain facility fees from healthcare providers. The measure originally had a much wider scope, even the broad name of the Patient Medical Debt Protection Act. Mm-hmm. Can you explain the fees you're hoping to regulate in the future? And additionally, why has the legislation been narrowed in the course of being amended?
It started out as a very comprehensive bill, strengthening the law that we have in New York requiring hospitals to give free or very low-cost care to people who aren't on Medicaid but are nevertheless low income, improving the billing process so that if you go to the hospital, when you get a bill, it's something that somebody, you know, without a PhD in health policy can figure out.
That'd be nice.
That would be very nice. And I tell you, as chair of the health committee, I get medical bills that I often find impossible to figure out. And I don't know how people do figure those things out. And I guess the answer is they don't. So part of it was trying to simplify and regulate the billing and a variety of other pieces. We're still pushing that whole comprehensive package. A lot of it has fallen out of this year's bill at this point, but we will be reintroducing those pieces after this session. And they've fallen out of the bill because a lot of the details here are very complicated, and we are working with hospitals and the medical society and others to try to sort out a lot of those details so that we can come up with a bill that will work and will be something that patients can understand and that healthcare providers can live with. And that's an ongoing effort. So we have, for the moment, stripped down the bill to two pieces. One, which is now in a separate bill, to lower the interest rate that can be charged if on a court judgment for non-payment of medical bills, because the allowable interest rate is pretty high, and we're proposing to ratchet that down very low. And that's a separate bill that I'm hoping will pass both houses in the next week. The other piece about facility fees, which is something that a few years ago, if you'd said facility fee, nobody would have known what you were talking about. A lot of people still don't know what we're talking about. I'm not entirely sure how to sort out the whole facility fee business.
That's going to be awkward when you leave here and we hit you with the facility fee for coming to the studio.
Right. But what a facility fee is you go to the hospital and you get a bill, and then in addition to, you know, the cost for the room and the operating room and all the rest, there's a line on it called facility fee for an extra price tag. And what's that for? Well, that's for using the hospital. Well, doesn't the rest of the bill cover that? Well, this is, you know, general. And so our bill originally would have essentially wiped out facility fees and told hospitals and doctors, if you want to charge extra, you know, build it into, you know, your hourly rate. What we've kind of whittled it down to, again, in an effort to try to get it enacted over, you know, concerns that hospitals and doctors have raised, is to say that you can't charge a facility fee, A, without giving the patient prior notice, or if they're, you know, if it was, you know, emergency care, so you couldn't give prior notice, at least give the notice at the time of the billing. A, that there is a facility fee, and B, whether it is understood to be covered by your insurance or not. I mean, the next step would be to say, if it's not going to be covered by the patient's insurance, you shouldn't be charging it. But that'll, we'll get back to dealing with that next year. So this will be a very small step ahead, it's been whittled down to a very small step ahead, basically because this stuff is just enormously complicated, because our healthcare system is wildly complicated, which, to get back to our first topic, the New York Health Act would eliminate any necessity for discussing facility fees or any of that. Nobody would ever see a hospital bill again. But in the meantime, we're trying to do, you know, a step at a time. One of my early exposures to the notion of a facility fee was, and I'm not sure whether the hotels in Manhattan are still doing this, but apparently there was a period in the recent years when several of the hotels in Manhattan, in addition to, you know, you'd ask how much does it cost to stay, or they'd say, well, so many $100 a night. And then when you check out, there would be a destination fee on the bill, presumably, you know, for the privilege of staying in a hotel in Midtown Manhattan, mm-hmm. which is indeed a privilege. And to be able to stay a night in my assembly district is a wonderful thing. But if you're going to pay for it, they really ought to tell you that ahead of time. And that's kind of like a facility fee.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Assembly Health Committee Chair Dick Gottfried. When we get back, we'll ask the Manhattan Democrat about the potential end of our public health emergency caused by COVID-19 and discuss the legislature's current pandemic oversight role. Don't go anywhere.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're continuing our conversation about public health in New York, and our guest is Assembly Health Committee Chair Dick Gottfried. Sticking with this consumer protection mindset, there are numerous state and federal protections designed to ensure that New Yorkers who seek medical attention for COVID-19 symptoms aren't being stuck with any bills, including facility fees. But there are reports, nationally at least, of people being asked by doctors and hospitals to pay tens of thousands of dollars. And then there's this problem that long haulers could suffer, which may not be covered by the pandemic protections because these are symptoms they might exhibit months and months after having COVID-19. What else, if anything, do you think the state could or should be doing to make sure New Yorkers aren't being forced to pay for their care? And are you hearing anything, even anecdotally, about New Yorkers being stuck with bills for COVID-19 treatments, including maybe facility fees?
Well, certainly. And on this topic, as on so many other topics relating to COVID, these are not problems that were created by the epidemic. These were problems that have been in our healthcare system for years,
right.
And COVID has shined a bright light on them and in many ways made them worse. We kept saying this in relation to nursing home issues. You know, COVID made a lot of existing issues in nursing homes more visible and worse. Same with paying for hospital costs and doctors' bills and the like. If you had something like COVID 3 or 4 years ago, you would have been in the same pickle. The only thing is there probably wouldn't be a news article on it because it would be one or two people, not dozens or hundreds or thousands of people. So yeah, these are problems that have been in our system and are continuing in our system. The health department needs to do a better job of outreach to the public to let people know that, for example, there are things like when you go to the hospital, if you really can't afford the care, they're supposed to offer you free or very reduced price care. This is a law that's been on the books in New York, you know, for, I think, 10 or 20 years now. And a lot of people are never told about it and aren't able to get that that kind of relief. Getting the word out on that in the case in relation to COVID is really important. I mean, somebody who does not have insurance or does not have very good insurance, right, and practically nobody in this country has very good health insurance, in my view, you know, coming out of the hospital with a $100,000 bill for their COVID treatment, and, you know, for a lot of people, being treated for COVID is very intensive, literally intensive care, and can be enormously expensive. But under our laws, people with limited means are not supposed to be asked to pay those fees. And part of the larger medical debt bill, which we will get back to pursuing in January, deals with the reduced price legislation and making that stronger. So yeah, there are a lot of problems in paying for care and the like that have been made a lot worse by COVID. We need to do more to let people know what their rights are and for the health department to help protect people's rights when needed.
In my life, there are more and more signs of this return to normalcy. The fact you're in the studio with us right now at the Capitol is one of them.
Right.
Does this mean that our public health emergency is over in New York? And if not, how do we know when it is?
Yeah. Well, my answer to a lot of questions like that is my degree, my professional degree ends with a D, but the first letter is a J, not an M. Both of my parents were trained professional statisticians, but I'm not. You know, I said my mother was a lifelong teacher. For her first couple of years of life, she was a statistician, then got a job as a math teacher.
Okay.
But, you know, this is what we hire the health department to be an expert on, and to have epidemiologists who know what they're doing. By the way, we in New York have been blessed for generations with having, both in the at the state level and in New York City, the most professional and top-notch health departments in the country. And we were among the first in the country to have a state and a city health department. The city health department was operating actually a couple of decades before the state health department. So we've got some very talented people. We now have a national administration that is focused on science ever since January 20th. And those folks are looking, you know, have been looking in very great detail and with a lot of professionalism as to when and how we can loosen various restrictions. I'm sure the professionals in the state health department are working pretty constantly advising the governor, and they've got outside people as well advising them on what restrictions can be released, relaxed, and when. And we've been seeing that in the daily press every day. There will come a point where it will be clear, or at least clear to people who know about such things, that there really is no longer an emergency. Or at least what will certainly be happening and is happening is that elements of the emergency orders are being withdrawn. Whether we will get to a point where no emergency measures are needed, we'll see. Hopefully we will. But that certainly ought to be not a political judgment, not based on how many people, you know, are angry about not being able to have a full movie theater.
Well, nothing's political here, though, Assemblyman.
Right.
Not in New York, not in Albany.
Right. But we need those decisions to be made, not on whether people really, really, really want to be able to go to the movies again or a Broadway show or whatever and have a full audience, but what the science would tell us. I mean, Broadway shows in mid-September are going to be back in business, but with seating restrictions. So the question would be, at what point will a Broadway theater be able to sell all the tickets, not just half the tickets?
I guess going along with this line of questioning is the fact that about 3 months ago, the legislature, driven by the Democratic majorities, passed a measure that was billed as, you know, a restriction on the governor's pandemic powers, which he was granted last year in response to this public health emergency, which were on top of the powers he already has to deal with a public health emergency. The case was made that as a result of these changes in statute, more legislative oversight was going to be actually involved in these directives from Cuomo, to making sure that they're modified or extended with legislative oversight. Mm-hmm. How has that worked in practice? For example, what's your review process when you get directives or orders that deal with health? And has the governor been denied the ability to extend or modify any of his directives that you're aware of?
You know, every so often, whether it's every few days, maybe every week or so, I get a notice from the governor's office. Attached to it is a memo from the health commissioner saying the following orders have been modified as follows. A few days ago, I got a notice saying that all the orders that were due to expire have been renewed, which was not really news. You know, and I look at these things, and my reaction to them generally is, you know, thank you for letting me know, but frankly, I'm respecting your judgment on this. I'd have to go back and check whether we have, I mean, what the bill that we passed said that, A, we had to get notice anytime a new directive was issued or a directive was modified, and that's why I'm getting these notices from the health department. And secondly, it said that by a vote of both houses of the legislature, we could undo one of those directives. Getting the notices, is useful, and, you know, this certainly ought to be fully public, although I think the governor had been making them all public.
Just hard to decipher a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't think our legislation from a few weeks ago, I don't think it had a plain language clause in it.
Well, it did add this nice Excel sheet that they now post where you can sort of see things a little clearer, yeah. At least in timelines. So as a reporter, I really appreciated that.
Ah, okay. I'd have to go back and check whether we've actually overridden any of his orders since this passed.
Well, I guess there was the suspensions of things, like there was the three or four resolutions that were passed dealing with, yeah, like Cuomo chips and the Larry Schwartz, right, specific resolution. Yeah. But I was just curious, you know, since then, it seems like he's been kind of allowed to roll back a lot of these issues on his own, whether it's, you know, the hour restrictions on restaurants and all that.
Yeah.
And it seems like that's probably where we're going for the foreseeable future. That's, you know, let him drive the bus, because like you're saying, he's got the experts who can really inform him on this, whereas, you know, the legislature has legislating duties, right?
Yeah. I mean, it may be that having the legislature more visibly looking over his shoulder and being able to tug at his sleeve and say, you know, no, you're not going to do that. Having that prospect of oversight may well be making them think harder and rethink some issues. Having somebody looking over your shoulder tends to do that. While I would hope it makes them careful and thoughtful, I would hope it doesn't make them less committed to following the science, because that, to my view, would not be a good thing. So far, they, as far as I can tell, they do seem to be following the science. So the legislation we passed, I think, was useful. It's not an earth-shaking change in the situation. You know, until COVID, the governor's emergency powers had not really been much in the news, because thankfully we haven't had long-running emergencies. I mean, you know, when there's a massive blizzard in part of the state, the governor routinely uses emergency powers to make one thing or another happen differently. One example we're all familiar with, on 9/11, in a matter of minutes, the governor was able to use his emergency powers to shut down the political primary,
right,
that was going on that morning, and to then reschedule it. So we haven't really had an experience in New York of a long running and very broad scope of a use of emergency powers by the governor, and so it's, you know, it's fitting that it made us reexamine the situation, because I think for generations the governor's executive powers have been used prudently and well, and I wouldn't have wanted them not to be there. So I think a lot of things over the next several years are going to be carefully looked at in retrospect in terms of how did we deal with this during COVID. And we we certainly should be doing that.
Well, I look forward to that review with you over the next few years, but unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it now. We've been speaking with Assembly Health Committee Chair Dick Gottfried. Assemblyman, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I always enjoy it.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.